Three, two, one.
All right. Welcome, everyone, to this week's episode of the No Normal Show, brought to you by Revive. This is where we leave all things status quo, traditional, old school, and boring in the dust and celebrate the new, the powerful, the innovative, the future, all related to how brands can lead the way in health. I'm your co-host, Desiree Duncan, Vice President of Health Equity and Inclusion at Revive. I am joined by co-host Stephanie Weirwill, SVP of Integrated Marketing. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, Des. Happy to be here with you.
Excited. And I'm also joined by new co-host Chris Wickline, SVP of Strategy at Revive. Hello, Chris.
Hi, Des. Welcome back from your vacation.
Thank you. Thank you. I mean, we all need that vacation, right? We live for it. I don't think I've ever really fully taken a summer vacation, but when I was in Chicago, I got those good fall vibes. The high temp started dropping because it's been so hot here in Nashville. But it got to feel like some fall. And I think I packed inappropriately with all these short sleeve shirts and I needed a jacket.
Wow.
Yeah.
Big changes.
Yeah. I had to go shopping to get like shirts because I was like, ooh, I did not plan accordingly. But that leads us into, I live for a fall moment. Autumn is my time. It's my season. I get excited when the pumpkin spice latte makes its return because I'm basic like that. And school is starting back, which luckily is not for me anymore. But how are you feeling? Are you feeling and sensing a seasonal shift?
Well, unfortunately for me, my boyfriend has been taking us Halloween shopping for the last 2 months. So if you've walked into a Home Goods or a, you know, any store, really a Target, all the Halloween has been out for a very long time. It's real.
Spooky season is here.
Yes. Oh, you're going to have to give it up. What's your plan for your costume, Stephanie?
Oh, I haven't got there yet. It's just been all the decor. Actually, I was looking, I don't know if you've seen, you know, those, they have Christmas villages, of course, where you have those little houses for Christmas. Well, now there's Halloween villages, which is very exciting. So I'm very tempted by that. Make a whole Tim Burton setup. If I have to go in, I may as well go all in.
There you go.
I mean, go in. Like, life is not worth living unless you're just going to go fully in. Chris, how about you? How do you feel about the autumn season?
Well, I love fall. I would say fall is my second favorite season. I am the human oddity who enjoys a cold and snowy winters, but fall is right behind it because it means that winter is coming. But what I love, you know, in my neck of the woods, you start hearing the crickets getting a little bit more active at night, the sun sinking low. It's just giving off all those signals. It's here.
All that lovely campfire and camp. Like, I love the idea of going to a ski lodge. I'm not trying to put skis on and do things, but I love just hanging out in a cabin with little coffee or tea or other things and taking in that life, but not actually doing anything.
Well, we don't want to rush fall too much yet. I do love it, but yeah, it signals something more for me too.
This is facts. Well, Stephanie, I look forward to hearing more about how your Halloween town is coming together. I don't know. I'm not a person that really decorates for seasons. Maybe I should be.
As you say, I'm having flashbacks to Beetlejuice. Do you remember that scene in Beetlejuice?
I used to. I was obsessed with that soundtrack.
I hope that's not what this becomes. I just, you know, he loves it. He loves the decoration. So I'm just here for it.
Well, that is sweet. All right. So for our topic moving forward, we're going to be talking about some headlines, what's going on in the news. Always, of course, the news feels super daunting as we've been experiencing these last few years. But there's all kinds of interesting things that are going on in health. But Chris, we'll start with you. What has been sticking out in your mind of what you've been reading across headlines?
So something that really jumped out at me that really actually caught me by surprise was telehealth and how it's proliferating in schools. So, you know, obviously, you know, think of where we were at with telehealth prior to the pandemic, right? And then, you know, all the ups and downs in, you know, its peak, its fall off, its leveling off. And then to see that it's making a huge comeback in public schools as a way, not only just for healthcare, but for mental health, was just, I thought it was so cool and honestly really unexpected.
Yeah, unexpected in the sense that the schools are setting this up and getting it going, and rather than it just being on the ownership of the parent and the children themselves.
Yeah, so there's a few things kind of converging, right? There's, you know, there's the fact that in some places, kids just simply don't even have access to basic healthcare. So there's that component of it, right? There's equity components of it, that may be even worse in certain places. But what really also, you know, got me thinking, you know, what a cool thing this is from a mental health point of view, given the challenges in, you know, that kids have been facing due to the pandemic, given the challenges in schools with mental health impacting children, aggression, you know, school violence, those sorts of things, and what an outlet that telehealth and or mental health via telehealth could be for that.
Yeah, I love this. And just digging into some of these details. So for Atlanta schools, this is available to all students from kindergarten to 12th grade. And it's made possible due to a contract with Hazel Health. And that contract is $500,000 a year and can be renewed. So I don't know, $500,000 to me in the scheme of giving all children, all kids access to healthcare and telehealth, I would love to run that math, but it feels like that really could pay off in terms of kids not missing school, kids being healthier, kids being set up for life successfully if done well, right? Like, what does that lead to in terms of even wellness education? Like, the benefit seems powerful here.
1000%. Like, to me, it feels like the continuation, you know, the 2022-23 version of the support the schools give to students from like school lunches and transportation. It's like it's providing that thing that just takes that extra edge off of a student's mind so that they can focus on school. So yeah, definitely excited to hear about how this develops. I guess I should say more optimistic. We shall see how it goes. But yeah, I feel like that is quite an easy investment for such a huge opportunity to better the lives of students.
You know, and I couldn't help but pull out my crystal ball and think of you, Stephanie, because I'm thinking about all of these kids now who may have more access to telehealth than perhaps even if their parents were using it, right? And what does this mean in terms of how today's young kids are seeing healthcare and expectations being shaped around it in such different ways? I mean, if this just becomes kind of a regular part of their school experience, think of how that translates as they age, right?
Yeah, that's a great point. It's interesting. So again, if done right, and if the access is truly available and people know how to use it, like when kids graduate from high school, there's that big moment. We probably all felt it. I felt it, right? Like, I didn't go to a doctor for several years after, you know, college when I had access to free on-campus healthcare. After that, it was like 5, 6, 7 years. How do you even begin to navigate the healthcare system? It's wild. So if you've grown up knowing how to use telehealth, then that is really powerful for young adults, and theoretically helps them, you know, be better informed to be able to hopefully one day navigate things like healthcare insurance. I don't know. That's a pretty big leap, but I agree. I mean, it's really powerful, and it's exciting that we're finally here as a society. With these three states, to caveat, these three states.
Making progress with the three. But also, speaking of progress, just the normalization of mental health and taking care of mental health care, and even just providing that directly through telehealth, through schools. You know, I'm always sounding Gen Z. I'm not Gen Z, but I feel like all the generations appreciate like what they stand for, how they're shaping our society. But yeah, I love the fact that there is this opportunity for students to get the support that they need, that it's not even just like support. It's just kind of like everyday life, you know, just like we need our own kind of, I guess, like banking skills or whatever. This is part of the thing that just makes us, I don't know, human.
You know, I also think it's cool that there's some health systems getting in on this. It's not confined to some of these peer plays in the telehealth space. There are some health systems getting in on it. My question is, knowing how constrained health systems are with mental health resources, can they support that? Or are they more focused on kind of the physical aspect? So it'll be interesting to see what system, you know, how systems jump into this and, you know, how they can carve a place out where they have some advantages or challenges against some of the new entrants in this space.
Yeah, that is a big question. But speaking of challenges, moving on to the healthcare workforce shortages, you know, that is something that's been a topic that we've been hearing, we've been talking about for quite a while. But there was a new recent report that came out. Stephanie, I believe you were able to take a deep dive into that.
Yes. So we've been talking, if you're a frequent listener, we've been discussing the healthcare workforce shortage in great depth and at high amounts of passion. We see it being a very, very critical issue, not just this year, but over the coming years. And we love the Keckley Report by Paul Keckley and cite it pretty often, but there was a recent article there that highlighted that about a week ago, the Labor Department reported that the U.S. added 500,000 new jobs, including 70,000 in healthcare. And I think what we see as the challenge to that is we know there's a healthcare workforce shortage. How in the world do we staff not just what we have, but what we need, including the turnover, which is now up to almost 20%, five times higher than the general workforce. So we don't need to go down the road of the problem, because I think we're all highly aware of it. But what was really interesting was he put forward in this opinion piece a thought about what the solution could be. And one piece of the solution might be inspiring and encouraging people to take on more self-care, in quotes. So self-care is defined here as any function which is under individual control, deliberate and self-initiated, meaning people taking care of their own health, people knowing where to turn, people handling some things for themselves. So just to give an anecdote or type of analogy, other industries like banking, travel, entertainment, retail have built their business models in the past couple of decades around the idea that if you give consumers the right information, they can actually engage in these decisions and kind of with their own self-interest. So because of that, you need fewer workers. So think about retail, right? It used to be brick and mortar only, and you needed people to staff those stores, and that limited how much you could sell. Well, of course, as e-commerce has come to play, you have people being able to shop on their own, make their own decisions, have their own information, ask less questions, and therefore increases your amount of growth. Same with travel. You used to have to pick up the phone and call to book a flight, and now you can do it yourself. Banking, right? We're seeing the demise of brick and mortar banks because you used to have to ask questions for every single tiny thing you needed, or let's say investments, right? Make a phone call, and now you can do it yourself, even though finance is highly complex. So the argument has long been in healthcare, that's not possible. And we've seen the challenges of self-care over the past 3 years, right? Like, to be clear, we've seen the challenges of people and the trend of I'm going to take this into my own hands and do my own research and the challenges that presents. So don't want to act like there's no challenges here. But the point is, how can we empower people, not so much with information to make their own medical decisions, but more so with information about when do you need to consult your doctor or visit the emergency department versus when can you take care of yourself from a lifestyle standpoint? So it's a big, big topic, but we love the maybe somewhat controversial premise that we could reduce our workforce needs if we could solve some of this. So discuss.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's so much there. And it's honestly just a different way of looking at the kinds of things that we should be doing to empower people anyways, with a lens towards, hey, it actually helps us become more efficient. It helps them be healthy, helps us be more efficient. So, you know, when you think about, I may be dating myself, but, you know, I think about what it used to be like to have to engage in any kind of banking, right? I mean, you know, it was a real challenge just to get some of the most basic information. And today when I have health questions, you know, I'll sometimes turn to my chart. A lot of times the answer is, oh, you need to come in. right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, how do we support folks in that journey, plus also make sure that they can take, you know, meaningful action.
I also love the reclaiming of the term self-care. This has been a topic of discussion of like, what is actual self-care? It's not this spa day or treat yourself shopping or doing all the things that are essentially more like vices, like Netflixing all day. But the fact that really true self-care is taking care, having the time, the capacity to take care of your own needs, take care of yourself. So like when you first mentioned the self-care, I was like, wait, what? But yeah, this makes so much more sense of like, these are the things that we can take care on our own.
Yeah. You know, what's really interesting about that, I love that, Des. I hadn't thought of it that way, of true self-care is keeping ourselves healthy, which doesn't have to mean in this instance where we're talking about reducing workforce, where it doesn't have to be, you know, don't come to the doctor, because we certainly are aware that clinicians have to be very careful on their advice when someone has an issue. You come in to see a clinician because you want to be sure that there's not an emergency. Like when I call Teladoc, they often will tell me to go to the doctor, and I appreciate that, right? But sometimes they'll tell me that I can wait. So there's some of that telehealth can solve. But I think the bigger thing here, and let me just boil the ocean for a second. The bigger thing here is if we can help people keep themselves well, help people have a healthier lifestyle when they're not, you know, when they don't have an issue, we know that that leads to a reduction in healthcare costs, that leads to a reduction in the healthcare workforce need, but it's often not done at an individual organization level because, of course, the margins are challenging. So it becomes a bigger systemic issue, which I don't want to try to solve here, but I think all of it, it's just, we haven't talked about it in the sense of workforce before, and that's the new element.
Yeah, I love that, especially since the conversations around access and capacity for taking on new patients, like we mentioned earlier around behavioral health, mental health, that this could help with alleviating some of those issues. All right. So moving on to our next topic, something that I was reading about is, you know, we have social media. Social media has been with us since, I don't know, 04, maybe sooner than that, like MySpace days. Although back then it wasn't quite called social media yet. It didn't really have a name. Maybe even, dare I say, Friendster, talking about showing age. But the conversation around this is, you know, are social networks, are they still social? Are they social even more, anymore? Especially given the increasing emphasis on consumption versus connection, you know, we're entering maybe this new era of reshaping this. So what does social media look like? And especially knowing that, you know, Gen Z is feeling the issue around like authenticity, you know, with Instagram and TikTok, you know, these are the most popular platforms within the younger generations today. It feels a little too curated. You know, that it's a little too polished and filtered. And so there's been apps that feel more or tout themselves as being more authentic, such as the Be Real app. I don't know if, have any of you used that yet? I have not. Like, I'm always slow to join like TikTok. I'm actually barely on there. I'm no Chris Bevelo in that regard. But Be Real essentially is that it's supposed to be the anti-social or anti-social media, in the sense that you will get a prompt at various times. It'll change each day. You'll just get a prompt, and you're supposed to, it'll take a photograph from using your front facing as well as your outward facing camera and take an actual image of what you're actually experiencing right now, and not just the highlight reel that you're sharing on your stories. So it's a very interesting concept, but even that is under some scrutiny because you're able to take unlimited retakes. So then is it really authentic? So yeah, it just continues the conversation around, you know, what is authenticity? What is true connection? Like, what do we actually crave? Especially as marketers, as we're trying to, you know, get our information, our ads and all that in front of folks where they're looking for something that's a little more real. So maybe how do we tailor our content for that? But no, I just threw a lot out of there. Just curious. I know, Stephanie, you're kind of our social guru. What are some of your thoughts around that?
it's such an interesting trend or prediction. It reminds me of a headline from a couple weeks ago that for Gen Z, 40% of Gen Z users prefer using TikTok and Instagram for search over Google. So maybe not on the authenticity side of things, but the standpoint that social has become much more utilitarian than it was in the past. And I guess, first of all, yes, I think we've seen a whole lot of pushback on the authentic versus not authentic and even body positivity. And so much of that has bubbled up. But I would add to it the fact that social channels have now become a use for everything in life. So I personally, as a millennial, find myself using Instagram for search. So for example, if I'm going to a restaurant, I look at the menu on Instagram visually before I choose my meal. I never choose a meal based on the menu itself. I go look at it on Instagram. I go look at other people's photos. I look at, you know, instead of going to ratings and reviews on Google My Business, I go to Instagram, right? So I think that's fascinating. And it just adds to the flavor of social is not just social anymore. That's not what we're here for. It's so much bigger than that.
Yeah, I found myself, I used to be an avid Yelp user, but in recent year or so, I've noticed that I've been going more to Instagram for that as well. And even just kind of following who are some of the, not necessarily trendsetters, but like some of the food blogs, restaurant, like whatever city I'm going to, I try to find some of the Instagram accounts that are going to at least give me the highlight reels of what restaurants I should be checking out, what cocktail lounges, what parks, beaches, whatever, and then go do that own research of getting the experience of seeing it on their Insta accounts to let me know, like, ooh, is the ambiance, is that what I want? What kind of experience do I want other than, you know, these are the menu items on their site? So it is quite interesting to see kind of that shift.
And from a social strategy standpoint, I remember the days when social strategy, you know, what's the role of social? What's the role of Facebook or Instagram? And it was always, you know, 10 years ago, it was to connect people, to build community, to build followers. And you all know I'm super anti building followers as a goal. Why? Because social is so much more. Because we can drive search, we can drive commerce, we can drive purchases, we can drive revenue. And that's how consumers are using it. So I think this trend is really important from a business standpoint, where we've seen many, many, many businesses build themselves through social alone.
And especially, I mean, with big algorithm, I mean, look at how TikTok is set up. It's not necessarily about just who you follow. It's the kind of content that you're scrolling through that you can fall into all kinds of like TikToks. Like a friend of mine was talking about like rich auntie TikTok, almost kind of like Black Twitter. There is, I don't know, Chris is probably like snow skiing TikTok. Like you can, it's all tailored to what you want to see. So yeah, it doesn't even really matter what the followers are, although people are having insane numbers of like millions of followers. But it does go back to, it's more than that. And that's also thanks in part to our big algorithm.
So you guys might have chosen me to co-host as an outlier on the group, but I'm certainly not as into all of the different social outlets that you guys are. But what's interesting to me as we're talking about this is all the different angles by which people are assessing companies, products, experiences. Before it was, okay, you have that kind of food and be done with it, using the example of finding a restaurant. And now it's like, looking for reviews. That's not even good enough anymore. It's like looking for the authentic menu. It's like looking for pictures of the food. So how does that translate to kind of how we portray what we really do and what an experience with us really means? And, you know, what does that mean from a healthcare point of view? That's a whole different ball game, right?
It is. If we can just blend TikTok and healthcare for a second, there was a headline a couple of days ago where ByteDance, which is TikTok's owner, Chinese-based company, paid $1.5 billion, which translates in won for to about $147 million in U.S. dollars, but just to give some context. So they purchased a Chinese hospital chain, Amcare Healthcare. Fascinating! We can talk about all the reasons why, but bring that up because social and healthcare is no longer just about, let's show the experience, let's show our employees, let's maybe target people with service lines. China tends to lead the way in some of these trends that we see with social networks, which I've seen Mark Zuckerberg pay a lot of attention in the past to WeChat and what WeChat is doing and pick up a lot of that strategy. So I'm not predicting that American social networks will stop buying healthcare companies, not saying that at all, but certainly saying that the customer journey in every single industry is so blended that there's, you know, that TikTok is making these big moves.
That is super interesting. And just seeing how that develops. I mean, everyone's getting into healthcare. Just noting a number of our conversations around Apple and Amazon and all the things, but to see a social media buy a hospital chain, it just like where, like, it's almost like I don't even ask, like, what are we doing? It's just like, I'm just going to hold on and see where this roller coaster is going. I no longer scream. I have no feelings. It's just like, okay, sure. This is the world we live in.
Yeah. So here's, I don't think we know what's going to happen yet, but I highly doubt they're purchasing a healthcare, a hospital chain for the margins, right? Like, I think that's not the thing, but I don't know. But what's interesting is what we've seen WeChat do, and WeChat is the largest social network in China and has been for many years. And WeChat is used for everything. Back to the point of not being social, right? It's used for payments. So you would pay someone, even like someone experiencing homelessness, you might give them, some money through WeChat, not by cash. Or you make your doctor's appointments through WeChat. So you actually schedule and talk to your doctor through WeChat. So that's been happening for a while. And we haven't seen that type of advancement in America with our social platforms, but we certainly could. So it's that kind of blend that you have to have the context of, which I've always said, wouldn't it be lovely if we had doctors in social media to solve misinformation in this country too?
That's so interesting that you mentioned that, like along the lines of WeChat and folks experiencing homelessness. That's something I was thinking about, as like, we no longer carry as much cash on our person anymore. It's all digital. And so when I see, folks who, are asking for donations, you know, I have to walk by and I'm like, I'm sorry, I don't have, any cash. And it's like, wow, the limits to what we're able to do and support our folks, in the sense of, they're not in the digital world. Like, we can't just Cash App or Venmo, but is there a way to get everybody access to this moving forward? I know that's not our job, but just something that I thought about while walking around Chicago, of just like, wow, I'm not able to just give, of money anymore because everything's digital and I don't carry cash anymore.
Well, and just a great example of how as some of these things advance, we have to be really careful that we don't, again, make divides larger, make access more of a challenge, because we're already seeing that with a lot of the things that are happening, right? So, telehealth and the pandemic and the like, it didn't actually necessarily help inequity. It made it worse.
Coming full circle to the conversation. All right. Any other things that have popped off that you want to share?
I'll give a half headline here. So we've talked a lot about Apple over the last several months, years. And Apple's moves into healthcare. Well, now we've seen Apple beginning to move into marketing and advertising. The rumor is that Apple may build its own DSP network, meaning demand side platform, meaning that Apple may start to be able to target ads through their platform. So what's interesting about that? Apple's long said privacy is a big deal. We don't want apps tracking you across different channels. Now we will have our own ad platform that is highly private and can relevantly target you in all kinds of places, and Apple can make money off of it, off of our, attention. But theoretically, folks would feel more comfortable with the privacy. So big rumors, don't want to make any full predictions. I think it aligns with the blending and bending of all of these tech companies moving into different spaces. So marketers, keep an eye on that one. Half headline for you.
Half a headline. Love a rumor. All right. So we will wrap it up with that. Stephanie, Chris, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, Des and Stephanie.
Yes. Thank you, Des and Chris.
And for all of you listening, thank you so much for joining in. If there's something you want us to cover, shoot us an email at nonormal@reviveagency.com. And make sure you share the show with your friends and colleagues and give us a review, hopefully 5 stars and a rating on iTunes. All of that would be greatly appreciated. And until next time, don't ever be satisfied with the normal. Push that no normal, y'all, and we'll talk to you next week. 3.